Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today is Friday, June 10th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard, and we've got an unbelievably filled day today. We're expecting New York State Assembly member Nader Sayers, who represents the Assembly District 90, which is comprised totally of Yonkers, and then Brendan Beery, WMU Cooley Law School professor specializing in U.S. constitutional law. We're going to talk to him about the House committee investigating the January 6th attack, which opened up last night. And then it'll be just you and I from 11 to 11:30, and then Vedat Gashi, who's a real estate attorney and a Westchester County Board legislator representing Yorktown, who's vying to represent the 16th Congressional District in the upcoming election. Oh, and I see, my goodness, here, Assemblymember Nader Sayers is on the line. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Hezzy. Always a pleasure to be on the show, and beautiful weather out here in Yonkers, New York, and looking forward to a great program as usual.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. Well, with you, it can't fail to be not a good show. So, you know what I find really compelling, and I guess a lot of people don't listen to what goes on in Albany or in Washington as much as we would hope they would. Because they're busy, they've got other things, other responsibilities. But you're there in Albany, working your heart out, and you bring about legislation, whether you initiate it or you latch on with others to promote a particular legislation. How do you bring that about? Because do people realize the type of work that you do when you pass legislation that caters to their needs? Do they recognize that, or is that just like it's done and you feel proud of what you've done and other people appreciate it, but most of the public are totally unaware? How do they get to know what's going on here?
You know, it's a good point, Hezzy. I mean, when you at any level make a decision to seek public office, you know, you need as an individual to really focus on what the roles and responsibilities of that role and that job. In my case, as a state assemblyman representing Yonkers, my responsibility early on was, what can I do to best represent the city of Yonkers? And being someone who's in Yonkers over 60 years, I've been involved with education, with law, with government, with healthcare, with support services. I understand there's a lot of needs. So, you know, one way I gather information is by communicating with a lot of people and making myself an expert on that issue. And then when I go to Albany, and we just finished the session this past week, as you know, the assembly is in session in Albany from the beginning of January to the first week of June. And the role of the assembly is to really legislate, to establish policy, establish procedures. And as a legislator, you know, as I said earlier, because of the concern for a community like Yonkers and also the state on a whole level, I look at ways we can make government work more efficient for the people. I look at ways where we can establish legislation that saves the taxpayers, saves the homeowners, saves individuals. For example, it came to my attention that many mothers, you know, with infants or adults with, that were using adult diapers or infant diapers, that it was very costly for them. I mean, to buy a box of Pampers, you're talking about $30-$35. And then you look at a city like Yonkers or Westchester County and communities all around the state where you have a 4.7, nearly 5% tax rate on diapers. That adds up. When you look at a 5% tax rate that every mother has to pay, and the difficulty in today's time with gas prices and everything else, is inflation is going up. People are having a very, very hard time. The public at large is honestly very upset, very hurt, very angry. They can't believe that when they thought that they had a certain budget they can live on, and then all of a sudden within a year, all their cost goes up some 20, 25%. A lot of people can't hack that. So as a legislator, as an assemblyman, any way I can help, you know, relieve that cost factor, you know, I would undertake. We supported legislation, for example, that takes away the state gas tax. As high as gas prices are, you know, there's some 16 cents relief of state tax, and then Westchester County came in and said, hey, you know what, we can take away our 32% tax rate, for example. And when you add that up and you're looking at, you know, the county and state, and you start saving 40, 45 cents a gallon, I mean, for many people, that helps a lot. You know, the tax, as I said, on diapers, we initiated that. That was a Sayage bill that, you know, we passed in the Assembly and Senate, and all the local and national diaper bank, the many volunteers all over that were extremely involved, were very happy. They said, you know, this is common sense. This is a necessity. And then I looked into it and realized back in 2006, the state of New York passed legislation saying, hey, you know, the state would abolish state taxes on diapers. I said, well, what about municipalities or cities? Well, the law wasn't broad enough. So you know what? Let's fix it. Mm. And by fixing it was to include all levels of government, municipalities, cities, counties, and make sure that they abide or they follow the same state guideline. So now with this bill, my bill, Sayage Diaper Act bill, all sales tax on diapers, whether infant diapers, and people don't realize how there's also a tremendous need and concern with adult diapers, people that are old people or disabled people that need to wear adult diapers. That's very costly for them. You know, when I visit senior citizen homes and I visit, you know, and I see, you know, individuals that are embarrassed to socialize because they have urine leaks, and it causes a real serious problem, you know, not only health and physical, but really emotional and social, where, you know, adults that can't control and they have leakage of urine and you have that smell that sometimes, you know, they rather avoid socializing with friends and family. And it's traumatic. It's traumatic. It's hurtful. And that's what I'm there to do. You know, I look at the needs of people and I try to address the needs. You know, we spoke earlier on the show.
I realize that is your effort and your focus, but then what is it about the process that denies, I guess, legislators collectively and individually of maybe not realizing that these things do have a major impact? And why are we slow? Is it a question of money that causes us to be slow in reacting to these issues? Because, you know, like the whole issue with diapers for infants as well as for adults, it's been going on for years. But thankfully, you at least recognized it and you pushed it forward. So what is it that slows things down, or do we not know that, or is that just human condition?
It's a combination. You know, from one end, some legislators may say, well, anytime, you know, I initiate something that's a tax saver or money saver for the general public, what does that mean? Mm. It's coming out of the pockets of, you know, big government or municipalities. You know, sometimes that's an issue. Whenever you do tax breaks on policy legislation, you got to say to yourself, well, how much income is lost to the state you know, state budget, for example. And a lot of times state budgets and municipal and county, they rely on taxes, they rely on generating revenue and income so that they can fulfill their obligations. So it's really a balance between, you know, trying to make sure that, you know, if you have a revenue shortfall, then you got to initiate tax breaks, you got to bring in business, you got to generate more revenue. And that's what we've done, like with the projects with UPS or the projects now we're working on with MGM, Empire Casino, to have a full game. And that's going to generate a lot more taxes, a lot more jobs. It's going to revitalize the economy. And from my end, I'm always looking at ways where you can save where you could save, and you can make sure you're creative in keeping business in New York. For example, we spoke on the show previously about how sometimes many big businesses are leaving New York. And they're leaving New York because government doesn't know how to negotiate, how to find middle ground, how to make sure that we can protect, you know, the tenants and promote affordable housing and make sure we take care of all the good things that we need. But at the same time, make sure that the business people and the developers and the investors have an incentive to stay in the game and stay in New York and continue to build. We look at Yonkers. Yonkers now we're the third largest city in the state, and a lot of it is because when many areas around the state are losing population, we're one of the few urban areas in the state that is gaining. And to me, I look at the waterfront and I look at the building development. So that's it. The other part of it is really, you know, the motive and the compassion of individual legislators to say, you know what, I'm there to do a job, I'm going to follow up on it, and I'm going to take on the big players or the big powers if I need be. And that's who I am. When we took on the big utility companies and we passed legislation to hold the utility companies liable and accountable, when there were storms, if you recall, the damage that was caused, people were hurt. And these utility companies were looking at cost-saving devices. Meanwhile, necessities that were so important were ignored or not dealt with in a proper way. That's why, you know, even something as simple as a sewage bill that requires utility companies to restore energy through generators and powers when there's a power outage, to police, fire, EMS, emergency services. I mean, people will say that's common sense. It is common sense, but sometimes you got to go a step further and say, you know, this is not only common sense, this is a necessity. Imagine during a storm or a power outage, God forbid, a family member is sick, and then EMS doesn't have the, you know, the power on, or they can't respond to you, or the police department can respond, or the fire department, God forbid, if there's an emergency or a power. These are simple common sense, but sometimes legislators got to be thorough, they got to be proactive, they got to look at something that, for example, on its face value doesn't make sense and say, well, what can I do to fix this? What can I do? And sometimes you got to legislate. You got to tell utility companies, hey, you got to tell municipalities, hey, diapers are a necessity. We don't want you taxing them. If the state doesn't do so, why are you continuously doing so? Does it mean they may lose some revenue? Yes, but that's an area where I don't mind them losing a little revenue because we're already providing a big increase in revenue to municipalities, especially with this year's budget. New York State has really increased funding to education, to health care, to mental illness. I mean, yesterday we opened up Landy Court, a project St. Joe's Medical Center had in the works for a number of years, and it's like an 80-plus unit affordable housing that has attached to it, you know, support services, mental services, and treatment programs. This way, people that are homeless, veterans, for example, Yonkers residents, that many of them have post-traumatic syndrome, you know, factors or this phobias or anxiety or, you know, other forms of sometimes disabilities, mental, emotional, that really cause the homelessness. So I've always been, and, you know, as an educator, we always speak about the importance of making sure we have an adequate amount of counselors and psychologists and social workers at the school level, because a lot of these young men and women that have these issues, and if these issues are not addressed in a proper way, they become worse, and then they lead to bigger problems, and in many cases, they lead to children being dropouts and getting into drugs or getting into crime and other, you know, ills of society. And then we have to deal with the correction system and the jail system. And these individuals, because of these problems, can't hold on to a job or they can't stay with their families and they end up becoming homeless. And then, you know, we try sometimes to help them and say, well, let's find them an apartment. But I say that doesn't take care of the problem. You got to look at the root cause of what caused the homelessness. Yeah. You know, and that's what this project, Landy Court, that they named it after James Landy, who's the chairman of the St. Joseph Hospital Board, you know, has been active some 30, 40 years in this endeavor. But these are the type of things, Hezzy, that, you know, that as legislators, we got to be proactive, as I said. And, you know, by the way, I'm seeking reelection again. If, as you know, I was elected in 2018.
That's terrific.
Yeah,
that's
this
terrific.
November.
You've done so much.
Well,
that's,
you know,
that's a joy.
Well, Yonkers,
you just never know when it's going to happen.
Yeah, well, Yonkers deserves somebody that's going to lobby. I'm the only assembly member that truly represents the entire city. My interest is Yonkers. Also, statewide issues. There's a lot of statewide issues that, you know, even though we represent our individual communities, you got to look at the best interests of the state. And that's why when we talk about tax-saving methods and bills and legislation, we got to look at making sure, you know, we keep the city busy, the state busy, we keep generating income and revenue so that we can, you know, pay the bills that we need to keep government functioning, make sure we have adequate teachers teaching and police and fire, make sure our hospitals have the resources they need, make sure that we continue to build affordable housing for individuals that need, and also at the same time make sure we help, you know, the taxpayers, the property owners. You know, there's going to be like $1,000 rebate that every property owner should be getting soon, you know, from the state. That's part of what we initiated. It's part of looking at the big picture and making sure that whenever you're trying to help people in the state, you do so by looking at the entire state and making sure you address every need. You know, property owners, and I know many of them in Yonkers, New York, that are really frustrated, you know, the high cost of energy, utilities, their mortgages, their taxes, they're frustrated. Mm-hmm. And so if there's a way you can keep taxes down, as we attempt to do, and there's a way to say, you know what, you know, from the revenue we have extra revenue, we're going to send every family, every property owner, $1,000, you know, rebate checks. So people say, well, you know what? That helps a lot, you know. It really helps a lot to compensate for the increase of cost of living, of gas, and so forth. That's, as they say sometimes, that's what we do. You know, we always hear that in commercials. But that's the role of government at any level. And, you know, my office, even during the entire pandemic, Hezzy, never closed the doors. We always helped individuals with unemployment claims, with small business applications, even with matters involving education and schools. You know, if somebody, you know, chose a certain school and their kid wasn't given that school, we put the extra effort to reach out, you know, to the Board of Education and say, you know what, this person, the whole family's been at school X, you know, for 20 years and siblings are there and it's really more efficient academically to keep the child in that school or to transfer a child. We take on these things. A lot of government officials say, you know, why bother? But if you're in that position and you can help a constituent, whether it's, you know, making their children's education more feasible or enjoyable, you know, it's a win-win. If you can't handle a matter, for example, in my state assembly office, I often train my staff to refer the constituent to the proper office. If it's something that has to do with a local issue or a county issue or even a federal issue. As you know, we spoke about how last month, you know, we collaborated with Congressman Bowman's office, and now we have one of Congressman Bowman's immigration specialists who comes to my office every Wednesday afternoon. You know, whether it's Ukrainian refugees or other individuals that have serious problems or a lack of follow-up or advice, you know, we have experts now, you know, so we attached part of the congressional office to the assembly office. And that's what they should be doing at every level. They should be collaborating so that, you know, people feel that when they have issues or concerns, that their concerns are addressed. And if the person they're talking to is unable or it's the wrong path, then put the person on the right path. Send them to where they can go so that they can at least get someone to help them and address their concerns.
Definitely, that's the name of the game. I guess it's your effort as an assembly member, does that really requires, you know, your being gregarious and outgoing and getting to know people? Because it's a people job, isn't it? With the other people that are there in elected office, you can't be like a loner. So you must be very gregarious, and you get to know people.
No,
and so you're not afraid of saying, hi, my name is so-and-so.
Does, and you're right. You know, and I see some of the most efficient and effective representatives or legislators at any level generally are people that are concerned, that are task-oriented, and individuals that have a history before being an elected official where, you know, they have a history of volunteering, serving on commissions, on boards. And a lot of these roles are really voluntary. There's no compensation. Mm-hmm. So when I see someone who for many years serves on hospital boards, on boards of education, on human rights commissions, on various functions where, you know, they're showing their concern, they're showing their pride in their community, their compassion for their community.
Yeah.
You know, I look at that type of an individual and I say, well, you know what? This person will make a good public official at any level. And sure enough, if you have those attributes and those experiences, it makes you a better person. I'm fortunate for the last at least 40 years, practically every board, every commission involved in a multitude of activities in Yonkers and surrounding areas, I've had the pleasure of serving as chairman of the Parking Authority, taking an agency that prior to my involvement was an agency loaded with potential corruption and revenue losses, and we turned it around, served on hospital boards, served as president of the Yonkers Board of Education. And really, you know, I'm very thankful for those opportunities because, you know, with my experience and involvement as a legislator, that plays a major role in my ability to understand what impacts education, the importance of funding, the importance of, you know, advocacy and lobbying. And Yonkers, you know, we always talk about the shortfalls we have as a city that, in my opinion, has an inequitable funding formula from the state. So we always get shortchanged. And even though we try to bring money to Yonkers, and this year is an example of that, it still doesn't fix the funding formula. You know, and in a way, you hate to be the city out there in the state that year after year is crying out because of budget shortfalls, you know, I always argue and say, well, fix it permanently. This way, you know, as a community, as a city, we don't have to continue to keep begging for more funds because, you know,
Is it because other people are fighting for their pieces of pie and they're afraid that they might get a little bit less? But because we don't talk about equity, shouldn't it be equitable for Albany to get what they deserve and Buffalo and Yonkers and Oshkosh, wherever?
Normally, you're right. It's a, you know, it's a pie, and everyone is lobbying for the biggest piece of the pie, and you know, it's politics. But then you got to learn how to package legislation so that it's not just a Yonkers thing. So my legislation that promotes more equity uses the percentage of free and reduced lunch. Right? To me, that's more reflective of the wealth of the community. We're hooked up with Westchester County. That's a rich county. So we get a lot less than, let's say, the other big urban cities, Buffalo and Rochester and Syracuse, because they're part of counties that are considered more poor. So they get, for example, a lot more money per kid than we do. But I say, look at Yonkers. We're like 75%. You know, diversified and minority community. We have a large disadvantaged population. 65 to 70% of our kids are on free and reduced lunch. So I'm looking at those factors.
So that's the question. Then why doesn't that have any gravitas among other people who are also fighting for equity? Why doesn't that make sense? What are we protecting here?
Well, you know, it's like I said, you know, it's political, and I am fired in that political. I'm trying to reach out
to a
number of other legislators that represent other communities that I believe have similar needs. I mean, when we talked about many communities, even right here in Westchester, Ossining and Peekskill, Rochelle and Mount Vernon, you know, and White Plains, I mean, a lot of these communities, when they look at their data, they say, yeah, Assemblyman, you know, you're right. We have a 60% free and reduced lunch. And, yeah, we're in Westchester, and we're also shortchanged. You look at communities in Long Island, upstate New York, all around the state, many of them are beginning to realize, yeah, this legislation impacts my school district. And people don't realize there's many state communities that took on big refugee populations, right? And they qualify for, you know, this type of legislation and this type of benefit. So it's the creativity. It's utilizing public service to the fullest. It's utilizing your skills, your negotiation skills, your leadership skills.
In a sense,
and really reaching
in
out.
In a sense, is it an embarrassment for communities to admit, hey, Our social structure is such that, you know, our people are suffering. Is that one of the problems? Is it becomes an issue with that?
Sometimes public officials figure, hey, things are going smooth. Let me keep, you know, things on beneath the surface. And, you know, and that's why I agree that, you know, public servants should always be held accountable like anything else in life, and they should be responsible. Right. And, you know, that's why we have an electoral process. Voters can decide. And even though, you know, many of us are strong advocates of our party platforms, whether Democrats or Republicans or whatever, you know, at the end of the day, you know, for the voters, they have to make a decision based on, you know, what's in their best interest. And, you know, sometimes you got to put aside my registration or my party affiliation and say, well, what's the best for my community? What's the best for my city? Who is deserving of my vote? Who has a track record of accomplishments and for delivering the needs to my community? And that's how people have to decide. And in my case, you know, I'm really proud of the fact that, you know, since 2018 with my election to the New York State Assembly, You know, I can really point to many successful things that we've accomplished, and we got a long way to go. You know, so my goal
Absolutely.
Is re-election. My goal is to continue to work hard, to continue to put the time and effort and the commitment, you know, that the position requires. That's my role.
Well, that's perfect. Well, I'm so excited that you're running again for re-election. That'll be perfect. We'll have a lot to talk about next week. So all
yeah.
the best to you and congratulations. I guess we should congratulate ourselves.
Yeah, definitely.
We're going to do well with you with another 2 years.
Well, we
got to
continue. And Hezzy, thank you because you continue to disseminate information and provide an avenue for us as public officials to reach out, to communicate, and for the listening audience to really get a glimpse of what's going on in Albany, in Washington, locally in Yonkers, on the county. And that's a tribute
yeah.
to your show and your abilities. Thank you, Hezzy.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you, sir. All the best. Well, there we
Take
have
care.
It.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Be well. Nader Sayers, the New York State Assembly member representing Assembly District 90, which in his case, which is very unique in the state of New York, is the only district that represents only one community, which is all Yonkers. Well, I see that Brendan Beery, the WMU Cooley Law School professor specializing in U.S. constitutional law, is already online. He's been waiting. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Hezzy. How are you doing? It was it was fun to call in a couple minutes ago and hear some New York accents. I don't know if we've talked about it, but I grew up in your neck of the woods. I grew up in on Long Island.
That.
Yeah, yeah,
oh,
like
Long
the Port
Island.
Jefferson. Yeah, Long Island. Yeah, you know, Port Jefferson, Smithtown, you know, that area of Long Island. So we got into New York quite a bit.
That is terrific. So how did you get all the way to Florida? That's a trip.
It was a long journey. I went to college in Illinois. Law school
uh-huh.
in Michigan. I lived in Michigan for a long time until they transferred me to Florida. So I've been, it's been a long time since I've, been a resident of New York, but I spent my formative years there and I love it.
Well, I've got to ask you, does that, by being in so many different places that are unique from one another, make them quite, it gives you a diverse perspective, yet are there things that coalesce between all these different communities, or is it a growing experience as you go through life in different stages of your life that inform you
yeah.
To the present? It's been huge.
It's funny, you know, when you grow up, I'm assuming that this is most people's experience. You know, I just figured the whole world was like where I was.
Mm-hmm.
what else is there, right?
Right.
When I got out to Illinois, there was really culture shock.
Wow.
It's funny. You know, in my family, and I think a lot of New Yorkers are this way,
mm-hmm.
you know, the talk around the kitchen table was about politics and religion. You know, these
yeah.
are things that we talked about. And when I got to the Midwest, I found that those are definitely not topics that
no,
people talk about. People
talk
about
that.
Their... No, they talk about, you know, and I'm not trying to diminish them. It's just different. They talk about
no.
cars. They talk about their relatives and what everybody's doing, you know, but they don't touch on that kind of stuff. So that was, and not to mention the food in the Midwest is just awful. You can't go from New York to the
Midwest.
Religion
is sacrosanct. I mean, I guess you're not allowed to touch that. You know, it's like everybody
right.
does their thing and they pray to the good Lord. And there's a response somehow, but yeah, we're different, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know if we're ever going to get together. I think there was a time when it was easier for us to understand one another. Too many
yeah.
fissures nowadays
right.
that divide us, or because we're not
yep.
looking to find a way, which was really
mm-hmm.
very compelling. You know. To the big issue yesterday when I was listening I was like captivated by the program yesterday on television
mm-hmm.
and the opening the opening scene of the January 6th committee, I had no idea all those things happened. I never saw a video like that before. I was blown away. I don't know if you know what really floored me when I think about it, and it was never discussed, which is very interesting. The president's 29th of December, admonition to the Proud Boys was, be there on January 6th. It's going to be wild. I never heard that. So I guess I must have been asleep or dead. maybe I was suffering a heart attack at the time, so I wasn't unaware. I had no idea. But I get the impression that you and Jeffrey Swartz, your compatriot, we speak to the two of you every week on Tuesdays. But you were aware of it. I had no idea that the president was such a cult figure internally. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that came from, because it meant that people were turned. They were turned and they were loyal to him, but they forgot that they were loyal. They were supposed to be loyal to the Constitution. That's a mind blower to me.
Yeah, and that's interesting you say that, because you're somebody who pays attention, right? I mean, you're not one of these people who's completely wrapped up in your own life. You pay attention to what's going on around you. And
I hope, I try.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep up with all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, right.
I was just surprised. I remember hearing about Donald Trump, and everybody used to think of him as being a very successful businessman. However, the bottom line was he never really had a big business. He had a small business that brought in a lot of money. Basically, he ran it like a mom-pa shop, and there was him, and there were a couple of other people, and that was it. A very, very small operation, and that gave him a sense, of power and prowess over other people. Mm-hmm. So he must have demanded some sort of loyalty and homage of people who were with him. But the fact that he could turn people in Washington who were used to other people of renown and prowess and intellect and capacity, and turn them to try to do things that were illegal on his behalf, that's a mind blower to me. I came away from yesterday, from the first 2 hours, with greater respect for Michael Pence. I had no idea he was under that much pressure.
Right.
To submit to lie about the election process, where it was demanded of him that he would say yes, the president won, and to change to change the outcome. I don't know how he's going to do it. And I guess when you and Jeff Swartz spoke about him being the Mike Pence is going to be the guy that will come out on top, I think, at the end of all this. It's going to be mind-blowing what he's going to have to say.
Yeah. Yeah. If he says anything, it's...
if he says,
Yeah, if he may just let the hearings speak for him. And it's interesting. I'm sure at some point we're going to hear from his chief of staff, Mark Short. And... I think Mark Short is probably going to say as much about Mike Pence as Mike Pence would want anybody to know. But you raise an interesting point about Donald Trump and the spell that he has cast over the Republican Party is something that we've been trying to get our minds around for a long time. It's one thing to work the mob up, right? I mean, people who are just I'll just say it, ignorant, boorish, bigoted, autocrats, authoritarians throughout history, they figure it out, right? How to appeal to the fear of these people and give them permission. I always think that's the biggest thing about Donald Trump and why he outperformed so many other Republican politicians is because He was the one who came along and gave them permission to be exactly what they are and to do it in public. They didn't have to keep the quiet part quiet anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for years they had this pent up aggression with no outlet. And he comes along and says, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay to actually say out loud what you think about Muslims. It's okay to actually say out loud what you think about Mexicans. You have permission. And that gave him great sway over the quote-unquote base of the Republican Party. And he manipulated the rest of them, just by scaring the Kevin McCarthy's of the world.
Yeah.
And the Steve Scalise's of the world, they realized he's got an angry mob. And there's more of them than there are of us, and they're the ones who vote.
Mm.
We've seen two profiles in Courage. That would be Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, and all the rest are profiles in cowardice.
Yeah, Liz Cheney really... I respected her for a long time because she was like an outlier within the Republican Party, but her dissertation and her delivery of facts and circumstance yesterday was absolutely exceptional. I had no idea how succinct she was and how her delivery was so calm and direct, and she's elevated to a much higher level in my mind. And she could be one of the big stars that come out of this. You never know if that might resuscitate some of the Republican brand, because her brand is a little different than the Donald Trump brand. So
yeah.
Fascinating. Right. Fascinating.
Yeah. And she's far more conservative than Donald Trump. Far more conservative.
Absolutely.
Than Donald.
Yes,
Donald Trump
yes.
is not a conservative at all. Right?
No.
he pretends to be, he pretends to believe things that he knows he has to pretend to believe, like pro-life and all this stuff. But he's not a conservative. If you're a conservative, you're supposed to be for gradual change, if any at all. You're supposed to be for preserving institutions that have lasted for centuries. You don't just throw them out.
Right.
Go back to Edmund Burke, the hero of conservatism. That was the whole point. Conserve the root word, right? Conserve the status quo. If you may change, bend to time and history in small increments, but you don't do anything that is sudden and ill-considered. Well, you can't say Donald Trump is a conservative. He wanted to throw out centuries of American democracy because he's a malignant narcissist. That's what he is. He's not a conservative. He's a malignant narcissist. That's his political affiliation. But
well said, literally well said. Do you think that this process can be cathartic? Will it change people's minds? Or are we... still captivated by our own perspective from wherever we came from?
Yeah.
Is this going to be a revelation, or is it going to be, that's exactly what we used to think? Because I was moved by the video that was shown. I thought it was brilliantly expressed. So I was literally taken aback. It was just fascinating. It took me a little while for Chairman Benny Thompson. He has this Southern drawl, which I haven't heard in a very, very long time. So it took me a little bit of time to just recognize his words. But then I caught on real quickly. I have an ear for voices and dialects, but I hadn't heard anything like that in a very, very long time.
Yeah.
That's why everything was homogenized. Right. America spoke like it would, with one sound, but it's not the case.
Right, right. It's funny, you know. I didn't realize I had a New York accent until I went out to Illinois. And people asked me if I was from England.
really?
Yeah, because they just kind of associated any accent, you know, with I don't know, you're from another country. And but they didn't have an accent to me because everybody who's on TV speaks like a Midwesterner. You know,
yes,
they pronounce
right.
their R's, right, and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I, you know, as to this, the question, you know, is that are people movable? First of all, you know, I got to give Jeff Swartz credit. You know, last time we were on, he said,
oh,
you
yes.
know, that the audience is one, and that's Merrick Garland. And I don't know where Merrick Garland is in his mind.
I don't know either.
But he better get his act together because this was the what Liz Cheney laid out, and now other commentators are catching on to this too. Of course, Jeff said it first, but she laid out a legal case like a prosecutor does, and you'll notice
yes.
especially. Yeah. Did you notice how many times she said, "You will hear and you will see"? You know,
yes.
You'll see
it was
X.
Brilliant.
You will hear X. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's how prosecutors talk to juries, right? When you're laying out your opening statement, you say, "Here's what you're going to see. You're going to see A. You're gonna see B. You're going to see C." So she was laying this out as though she was a prosecutor, talking to a jury, and that kind of language. You know, that would be something that would be a direct appeal to the Department of Justice and to Merrick Garland. Hey, we have a crime here. And she laid out seven steps, too. Talk about an organized presentation.
Yeah.
So this conspiracy has seven parts.
Brilliant.
Here they are.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because when she said, "This is what you're going to see," then I paid attention because I may
right.
have overlooked it if she hadn't mentioned it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize
right.
that. Part of the demeanor that's required in order for people to focus. It's hard to focus.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much
exactly.
going on at the same time.
Right.
Amazing. Amazing.
Right. You know, my only criticism of the, if, and this is a minor one. I thought that the chairman should have shortened up his opening statement because people who are tuning in early. Yeah, don't you think? I mean, people who are turning in early could start thinking, okay, here we go. It's another political, you know, blah, blah, blah. If I
yeah.
were him, I would have introduced myself. I liked what he said about growing up in Mississippi and giving a little bit of his own perspective. But I would have sort of hit that in probably 4 or 5 minutes. I then just turned it over to him. Then just said, now here's Liz Cheney, right? And really, because she's the one who really
agreed.
Launched into, you know, what happened here. So
you're right.
That's a minor
she's
point.
She's the one
but
that launched into it, and then we got into the heart of it through her.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a very difficult position for him because he was a chairman, so he
right.
wanted to give the presentation as well.
Right.
There's a lot of that. I guess I don't know what the right word would be or the right demeanor, but I think it's very difficult. It becomes a personal issue. I think it's like a personal presentation because he's not well known. At least
right.
I've never heard of him before in my life.
Right. Right.
So he was in the umbrage of someone like a Liz Cheney. So the minute she opened up her mouth, it was like we were going 65 miles an hour. But it was so succinct. And he just didn't have the depth. But that's maybe part of the way he speaks, his language, his tone. It's different. So I wonder how people will reflect on it as well. I'll probably get to like him more as the hearings continue further, get more used to him as an
right.
individual.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely fascinating. Was there
yeah.
something unique that you recognized about the whole process?
It was, yeah. How long has it been since we've seen a committee where there was not partisan infighting on the committee, right? This is really unique.
I've never seen that.
Yeah. No. Except back to Watergate, right? Back to Watergate, Republicans and Democrats both wanted to know what happened, right?
Yes.
But since then, especially in modern times, I mean, you got Jim Jordan and, Marjorie Taylor Greene and these people involved, and they intentionally turn hearings into circuses. And because then what happens is everybody who's watching just says, this whole thing is disgusting, right? This is just nothing but politicians giving speeches and fighting with one another, and I'm turning it off. The best thing that ever happened to this committee was that Republicans blew up the deal that they had, right? Because Democrats gave them a deal where they could have equal numbers on the committee, where they had to agree to every subpoena, or subpoena wouldn't be issued, where they would have equal time, right? And Republicans blew it up by putting people like Jim Jordan on the committee. And of course, then Speaker Pelosi said, well, okay, you're not taking this seriously. These people, you're trying to put people on this committee who are material witnesses, potentially. Jim Jordan was speaking to Donald Trump on January 6th. You can't put him on a committee investigating January 6th. And Kevin McCarthy says, well, then forget it. We're out. That's the best thing that ever happened, because it got all the clowns off the committee, gave Pelosi the ability to appoint a select committee, which she has the authority to do as speaker, and to populate the committee with only serious people, including the only two serious Republicans in the House of Representatives. And so then we wind up with this committee where the chairman and the vice chair, right, the chair and the ranking member, if you will, Thompson and Cheney, are in lockstep. Yes. They're not fighting. They did not give opening statements that were in any way contradictory of one another. And I also liked that there were only two people asking questions, right? It was Betty Thompson and Liz Cheney.
That was good.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That was very good.
Yeah.
Because it allowed it to be focused on them.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah, it was very succinct, very well done. It was better than a movie.
Yeah. And it's interesting that they had hired a producer. I think we talked about that on Tuesday.
Yes.
The guy from ABC who was in charge of Nightline and Good Morning America.
Right, I forgot
and
his name.
You could tell. Yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was well. They've learned their lesson. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess these are lessons that were hard fought in a sense. We went through the travails and we had best learned them, because otherwise we lose the nation, and we can't afford to do that.
Right.
Too serious. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think we're going to go here? Do you think Ivanka Trump, she seems to be a little bit, she loves her daddy, of course. I mean, who doesn't? As a child, not that I love him, she's uncomfortable, I think, or it seems that she's uncomfortable with his demeanor and what he's accomplished. Even Jared Kushner, I was surprised that he had some reservations as well in the little that we saw of him in the videos yesterday. That's going to probably affect the outcome, won't it? Because, they're family.
Right. And what they're about to find out, when they've actually already started to find out this morning, is that Donald Trump, I used the term malignant narcissist earlier, and I mean it. Malignant narcissist, first of all, is somebody who's been psychologically seriously injured in childhood. Okay, and I've done a lot of studying about this. either neglect or cruelty. And so you turn inward and give and make sure you have the only love that's available to you, which is your own. And fall in love, you know, with yourself. And as this goes on, you develop these, you know, ideas of grandeur and you're perfect and et cetera. And with him, it's so acute. But one of the things about these and malignant narcissism is closely linked to psychopathy and being a sociopath. They have absolutely no empathy, okay, because your whole world becomes you. Everybody around you is nothing but a stage prop in your grand play. And so you have no loyalty to anybody. Donald Trump demonstrates that, you know, 6 days to six ways to Sunday, right? And anybody who crosses him.
You're so right. You're so right.
It's, and did you see what he posted on his social media this morning?
No, I hadn't.
So, yeah, so now we're starting to see it, right, even his own daughter. Okay, so first of all, he went after Bill Barr viciously. You know, Bill Barr is a weakling, a failed, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and the vitriol and all this stuff. Then he posted another message and said, saying Ivanka Trump had nothing to – she didn't study the election results like the rest of us did. And anyway, she was already checked out. If that's the term he used. She was already checked out. Subtext, she had already betrayed me. Right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so now he's throwing his own daughter under the bus.
That's frightening.
Yeah, why? Because she said, you know, I respected Bill Barr and I believed what he said.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember that very well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So here we are. That's...
he's going to be a lonely old man at the end of the day. There's no way he's going to survive if he goes after his own daughter. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Frightening. He's going to need a lot of help if he can ever get out of it. Unbelievable.
That's that's why he's addicted to crowds. I don't if she's even around, you know.
She's gonna have to, I have no idea.
Right.
Very frightening. Well, I think it's wonderful that there's an introspection, and it does seem that the country is looking forward to it somehow. I don't know who's looking more forward to it than the other, what side of the aisle people are in, but it's going to be very interesting to hear the vitriol as this thing unfolds.
Right.
We'll see what people have to say. Do you think that we're going to have a much more engaged discussion, or are we going to be at each other's throats, or is the demeanor of more respect expected?
I think it depends on the audience. Now, when I'm looking at reactions already, it looks like people who are rational actors are all pretty much on the same page that it was horrifying to watch again, especially the footage that you were talking about and how angry.
I
felt the same way watching that again last night when I was watching those flood of MAGA enter the Capitol and come down the hallway, and literally a flood of these people corrupting that building.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. The anger that I feel of what they did to our country. And what they did to our standing in the world. The nerve of these people to think that you could invade that building, the seat of democracy in the United States, and defile it like that and make us look like nothing but a banana republic.
So
just
well
galling, you know? So rational
a lot of
people,
notches on that alone.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It really tarnished America.
It did. Yeah. People around the world were just shocked. You hear them talking about it. They never thought could happen in the United States. That a strong man could take hold, right, and unleash. One of the more powerful pieces of live testimony last night was when Officer Edwards talked about it. Because, you know, because Republicans are constantly trying to say now, oh, it was just, you know, it was just a bunch of tourists who got a little bit out of control. You know, one Republican congressman even said, it just looked like any other tourist day. And she was really clear that it was a war zone, right? And her...
I was in shock. First, I'm looking at her, a beautiful woman, young, and I'm saying, oh, my God, how was she able to hold the line? I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm. Right, for as long as she could.
She was hurt, and she kept on coming back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't think I've ever seen such valor in front of so much horror that she had to undertake. And she was sprayed, and she said her face turned red or whatever. I don't even know what, I had no idea they were even walking around with spray cans or whatever it was that they infected people with. It's amazing that they had all this. This was a plan, evidently.
Mm-hmm. Like a plan. No question about it. No question about it. And I think that's one of the major points they're trying to drive home. And and ultimately they're going to connect that plan to the very top, right? And they already have started that. He's the one who called these people to Washington, and he's the one who refused to contact his chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or his defense secretary or his the Homeland Security Department or anybody, because he wanted it to happen, because it was his idea. And that's the
just
point
the
that
invitation
to come through.
To come, you know, a week. Don't forget to come.
Right.
It was an invitation. He invited.
Right.
He invited the insurgency.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
That's
not
right.
his failure? By inviting people to come in and to attack the White House. You know, doesn't that mean he's complicit to all of this?
Yes.
That is his failure, isn't it? He can't be in denial. That's a smoking gun.
It is, and it's after yesterday night. It gets very hard for anybody to say Donald Trump didn't know what he was doing. You know, he was told by Bill Barr that he'd lost the election, and there was nothing he could do. He was told by his own data, his campaign data person, came into the Oval Office and said, "You've lost." So he knew. And he's the one who orchestrated the entire effort to undermine confidence in the election, right? So that was his idea. He's the one who tried to rig the Department of Justice, and rig the Pentagon, by the way, with his own people so that he would get away with what he was about to do. He's the one who was in touch with state election officials and trying to create these fake electors. I mean, this was all him. He was orchestrating all this. And as you say, he's the one who called the mob to Washington and unleashed them on the Capitol. So this is what we call conspiracy, a criminal conspiracy. That's clearly the direction Liz Cheney is heading. And we'll see, again, you know, we'll see if Merrick Garland is paying any attention.
Frightening stuff.
Yeah.
Also, I was surprised. The filmmaker, this Nick Quested, the documentary filmmaker, he was really quite brilliant as well. He pointed out a lot of things there. And the interview with this guy, Enrique Tarrio, the Proud Boy leader, that was amazing.
Right.
I don't know where these people came from. I had no idea these people lived in America. It's anathema to me. I would never even think that there is a person like that. Where does that venom come from? That's what I don't understand.
And that's what I don't understand either. I just think, you know, there are people who have very open mindsets, who are not afraid of change, who are not afraid of novelty, not afraid of people who don't look like them or don't have the same background. You know, a lot of people like that. And there's a lot of people then with closed mindsets that they're very scared, you know. They're very scared of anybody who's not like them. They're very scared of change. They're very scared when you start suggesting that, you know, our culture should change, like women should make decisions about their pregnancies, and like gay people should be able to have relationships and all that, right? Those ideas scare these people, and they feel like they're losing, you know, losing their culture and their society. And of course, the constant drumbeat from the right, especially Tucker Carlson and his ilk, that white people are being replaced. It's called, you know, replacement theory.
Right.
So, and we've talked about this a lot, right? They're coming for you.
Absolutely.
All these people are coming for you.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
And what?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Well, I was thinking that your legacy of growing up in Long Island and being out there in the Midwest, does that give you a sense like a capacity to recognize that there are other people with different concepts? You don't seem challenged by every individual you meet because of one particular perspective that they may have.
You are
who you are. So
right.
You're comfortable with who you are. It doesn't matter if you don't, the world doesn't know everything about you, because that's your private world. But whoever you are, you're comfortable. I know I've traveled the world. I have no problem with people. You meet people, to me they're human beings, and I don't look at their color or whatever they believe in. They don't have to believe in the same thing I do. But they're just human beings. I was walking with my mother. I was very, very young. And then this very, very tall guy was coming toward us, just walking the street, that's all. It wasn't like he was going to say hello or anything. So I asked my mother, I said, I've never seen anybody like that. You know, who is this person? So she said, she told me that he's probably Kenyan because he was like a 6-footer and from the Watusi tribe. And he was as black could be. And I just accepted it as another human being. That's it. You know, and it just... And I've traveled in the Muslim world, and I have had no problem. So I don't understand where any of this animosity comes from. Is it a lack of self-knowledge? Is that what drives us to be bigoted one way or the other because we're insecure about who we really are? Is that the problem?
And I just think some brains are more susceptible to fear messages than others. When you're talking about your view of the world, and I know that comports with mine, is that you can't convince me to be scared of a particular group of people. You just can't scare
exactly.
me like that.
Yeah.
Right? You can't scare me about people based on their ethnic heritage. You can't scare me about a religious group. You can't scare me about, you know, sexual orientation or gender identity. You're not going to scare me with these things. Because I know there's nothing to be – my brain doesn't work that way. I don't respond to appeals to fear.
Respond to what?
Well, there are things we need to deal with, like climate change, but that's not fear-based. That's just science-based, right? You know, that's not
exactly.
You know, but I think there's a big swath of the population whose brains do not work that way, and you can get them. You tell them who to be afraid of and who's to blame for their own lot in life and their own lack of purpose and their own lack of power. You tell them who's to blame for that and make them afraid, you know, you've got them. So that's where we're at.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is, that's a frightening thing about it all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know where we're going to go from here on end, but it's going to be very interesting. I'm going to be tuned in. I think it's later in the week. So actually Monday, I think, is the next
Monday
session.
So
it'll be very interesting to see where we go from there and to learn what the reaction will be. So there'll be a lot of writing, I'm sure, and television and who knows what. It'll be very interesting to see which way the direction of the nation goes and if people realize what's happening or not. I wonder if it's going to turn one way or the other, or if we're going to stay exactly as calcified as where we begin.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But
right. Or somewhere in
we'll
the middle.
See.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the middle. Okay.
Well, we'll have something to talk
you
about on Tuesday when Jeff and I join you on Tuesday,
right?
Because we'll have the Monday hearing behind us, too.
Absolutely.
So,
we'll save the time. It'll be definite. Well, listen, thank you so much. I couldn't have done it without you, as you can imagine. so thank you very much for your input, as always. Brendan Beery, what a pleasure.
Thank you, Hezzy. Have a great day.
All the best to you. Thank you, sir.
You too.
Well, there we have
Bye-bye.
It, folks. Brendan Beery, he's a WMU Cooley Law School professor specializing in U.S. constitutional law. And he's on with us every Tuesday with Jeff Swartz, who is also a constitutional law expert and was a former judge. So these two guys are just absolutely brilliant and very humble, to be honest with you, both of them, just stupendous people. Well, okay, so we have a little bit of time before we're going to speak to Vedant Ghashi, who's a real estate attorney, and he's a Westchester County Board legislator representing the town of Yorktown, he's running against he's running for the 16th congressional district, which was redefined, and so we'll talk to him about his effort, and first of all, why he got into politics, which is very interesting, and it's got to be very, very exciting. He's a very, very well established real estate attorney. Very well respected, and I've never spoken to him before, so it's going to be very interesting to hear what he's got to say and learn his perspectives and why he's running and why politics has caused him to focus on the political realm and what we can expect from him, where his attention will be and why it is the way it is. So there's a lot to learn. So it'll be a pleasure to get to know him. All right, so let's quickly look at a couple of other things that are happening at our end. And bear with me a moment here as I move on to some other things on the site. Bear with me. This, I think, you'll find very interesting. The first new community youth facility in nearly 60 years is coming to Mount Vernon, New York. We found this out yesterday. The Community Conscious Developers, the NRP Group, the Grandview Consulting Group, and Forward Thinkers Development, LLC, are proud to announce the release of a Request for Expression of Interest, an RFEI, for nonprofits to submit management and program ideas for an approximate 11,400-square-foot future youth community facility to benefit Mount Vernon. Residents. It's located within the Mount Vernon West area, and this facility will be the first of its kind in the area and the first youth community facility built in Mount Vernon in several generations. The aforementioned Go developers are seeking to experienced and qualified partners in the groundbreaking project that will serve as a positive seismic shift for both the community of Mount Vernon West and the broader communities of the city of Mount Vernon itself. So for informational purposes and not subject to the RFEI, this youth facility will be part of a larger, fully approved 315-unit housing development that will include educational and recreational spaces. As part of the vision and long-term goal, this project will seek to engender an environment of community-based housing, recreation, and education. And in accordance with their commitment to the future of Mount Vernon, they are focused on building the skills of today's youth and residents for emerging opportunities, along with city leaders, the surrounding community. They envision part of this community youth space to be utilized as a gymnasium, a multi-purpose classroom, office, and safe learning space. And safe is very important. So the innovative projects do not develop in isolation, and this will require a coordinated effort in the spirit of public and private partnership. And they are strongly encouraging the participation of nonprofits and other qualified service providers of community enrichment programs. So they're hoping everybody will be engaged. The first information session will take place via Zoom on the 13th of June at 2 in the afternoon, Eastern Daylight Time. And there will be a second session where you can attend in person. That'll be on June 28th. That'll be at 2 p.m. And that'll be at 11 West Prospect Avenue on the third floor. So you can register by sending in your email. You can come to our website at the Yonkers Tribune, or you can look us up as Mount Vernon Tribune, and you will find the article at the top of the page. So I think you'll find it very interesting. Now, let's look at some other things that you may find pertinent. There's also an image, a rendering of where the place is. And so if you find that interesting, I think it'll just be very exciting to find out, that's for sure. this is very interesting. I'm going to read this to you. This is a telling of a queer rights activist, and it's written by Max Michaelis. And I'm going to read the whole thing to you and then give you a better understanding of why I'm reading it to you again. So the article discusses the topics of suicide and suicidal and suicidal ideation as well. So you may or may not want to hear it all. So as a queer rights activist, Mr. Michaelis writes, I'm very transparent and direct in calling out injustice, and with my activism in holding people accountable, it's a must. Now, this communication can be a verbal slap in the face at times. I say exactly what I mean. However, my calling out of individuals is not a fury towards who they are personally, but their behavior. And queer rage is power, he writes, and that's a phrase used since the early days of the modern queer liberation movement. But the meaning behind it is not one of the violence that continues to oppress queer people. It's the taking of these horrible feelings that arise from injustice, honoring those feelings, and using them to create a world that is truly loving and equitable. So many people know I have been holding the actions, or inactions, I should say, of New York State Senator Shelley Mayer to the fire. Yes, you, Shelley. I know you are aware, but I'll explain that in a bit. I'm holding this behavior to the fire not to burn, to shed a light on true injustice in the form of intentional neglect. Intentional inaction. Senator Mayer is the chair of the State Senate Education Committee. It is the sole power of the committee chair to bring bills that go through so for a vote to then move on to both chambers of the legislature, to then head to the governor's desk for signature. Four very timely and important bills were stalled in the Education Committee this session that many New York State LGBTQ+ advocacy groups rallied in support of, even holding press conferences at the Capitol building with electeds who are also supporting the measures, the LGBTQ inclusive curriculum bill, the TGN NCNB anti-discrimination requirements in schools bill, and the Student Suicide Prevention Act, with edits being demanded that address the policing of mental health crisis in schools and the Comprehensive Sexuality Education in Schools bills. Well, as you stated, these bills were not brought for a vote. I hate to say it, Shelley, but facts matter. This is all on you. Even if you thought they wouldn't have passed the committee this session, an ally to the LGBTQ plus community would have brought it to the table so we would have those votes on record, even if for your own sake, so the accountability wouldn't all land on you. When I expressed my concerns to the ranking member of the Education Committee, the specific reference to the Youth Suicide Prevention Bill, he said in confirmation, quote, "I will certainly review the legislation and keep your thoughts in mind. However, only the chair can bring it forward for a vote and move it out of committee." So Anthony Nicodemo, we were recently speaking at an event, and you were saying how close friends you are with Shelley. There is a witness to this conversation. When I told you that the suicide prevention bill is stuck in committee, you were shocked and said you would bring it up with Shelley. What happened with that? What was the result? Michael Sabatino, I was directly told by a known Westchester County LGBTQ plus ally that you and Anthony had personally called them upset about my recent criticism of Shelley, as though they needed to, quote, do something about it, end quote. You have also contacted other organizations I advocate with as well. If this is true, why didn't you come to me directly? We have each other's emails from group email threads of our intersecting advocacy. That includes you, Anthony, Shelley. I've reached out to you and gave you my contact multiple times. Why are Anthony and Michael trying to take action in the dark to allegedly try to hurt me? Why haven't you come to me yourself to express your perspective on the matter? As to trying this all to the systemic roots of the matter, writes, why are we repeating again and again the dirty politics, fear-mongering, and the attempts, emphasis on attempts, to destabilize people's personal lives? Why have we reduced ourselves to this type of behavior? Why are we continuing politics and governmental operations that have left people disenfranchised for so long? I'm not a religious person, but I am a spiritual one, he writes. Actually, I believe we are all one. I also believe we have two answers in life and are the only two answers that guide every action and decision we make, love or fear. When we choose self-interest to advance our own political careers, we are choosing fear. We are closing our hearts, believing we are preserving ourselves to avoid harm and fictional lack. When we choose to exploit our own marginalized communities against the actual statistically proven needs of the communities we belong to for our own self-interest, we are choosing fear for the same exact reason. Our egos kick in. We cave to insecurity and actually do more harm than good to ourselves and others. As much as it provides a false blanket of comfort, we are not power and profit. I'm not saying I'm perfect by any means. What I'm saying is that each of us is already enough as we are. What drives me as a queer rights activist is connecting to the roots of our movement. Early queer liberation leaders like Marsha P. Johnson, a black trans woman, and Sylvia Rivera, a trans Latina, led our intersectional community in the fight against socioeconomic discrimination, housing justice, comprehensive health care, especially mental health care, racial justice, breaking down the prison industrial complex, and dismantling the police state and the brutality it continues to produce. When I boldly and unreservedly ask you, Shelley, to move the Student Suicide Prevention Act forward, I'm demanding this of you as a survivor of a suicide attempt in high school, as someone who continues to struggle with clinical depression and anxiety, who does not want to continue to see the pain, suffering, and preventable deaths of our children and young adults. When I demand of you, Shelley, to move the TG and CND anti-discrimination requirement in schools bill forward, I'm asking you, as someone who knows that 36% of trans and non-binary youth recently reported being sexually assaulted when forced to use bathrooms and locker rooms that didn't correlate with their expressed gender identity. When I demand of you, Shelley, to look beyond yourself and move the LGBTQI inclusive curriculum bill forward, I'm asking you, as someone who has seen Don't Say Gay bills, like the ones in Florida, turn into law across the country that attempt, emphasis on attempt, to erase queer history. Anthony and Michael, who hurt you? Who hurt you to allegedly want to engage in cowardly behavior, to victimize someone the way someone victimized you, and continue this cycle of abuse? Why are we uplifting the unfortunate politics that Yonkers and New York State as a whole are known for? Why are we using the struggle and joy of our own queer community to support those we believe will uplift our self-interest so that they can scatter a few crumbs for you? Why is the adherence to seeking cult-like admiration so important? Can't you see that I'm fighting for human rights that no political party can gatekeep? To Shelley, Anthony, and Michael, you must fear not. Unfortunately, I know there were attempts, failed attempts, that will continue to be conducted as a backlash in the shadows to attempt, emphasis on attempt, to silence me. This is nothing new and is a landscape New York State is all too familiar with. This is a fear I speak of. You have nothing to defend. You are okay. Some people may find the following to be awkward, uncomfortable, or something even to laugh at, and that's okay. That's a whole other topic, but I love you. I love you as equal human beings, especially during Pride Month. I feel the pain that has motivated you, and I'm so sorry you have experienced it for far too long. Humanity is truly unbearable, but we are greater than this world, and we are here to make the quality of life better for all. This is one lesson I've taken in deeply and continue to work on as imperfect, but enough a human being. As someone who held so much pain that I almost ended my time here on Earth too many years ago. So I ask you, Shelley, Anthony, Michael, and all those, do you have the courage to see what you're doing? Do you have the courage to say that you are not your behavior and you can change how you engage with the world? Do you have the courage to say enough is enough? Because you, as individual people, are already good enough as you are. Another New York State legislative session is done, but it is not the last. While we wait for the next, approximately 130 people a day in the United States will end their own lives without the second chance I received. While we wait for the next session, we sit with the reality that anti-gay hate crimes in our country increased by 51.3% from 2020 to 2021. You must know that nothing you do out of fear will hurt me. When you hold such immense suffering, that gives you the ability to sit and wait in the fumes until your last breath is taken. You come to realize that nothing really matters. Nothing matters in a good way. We are specks of existence on a tiny rock that may well be a pebble hurtling through space. Nothing you do out of fear will stop me if I was hypothetically stripped of my clothes and thrown in the woods. I would not be defeated. I would feel bad for you that you feel you have to reduce yourself to such a low. So choose love because that is what each of us is. Put your defenses down. It's never too late to surrender to yourself and heal. And there are some other things that you can look at in search of these of this write-up, and which I think you'll find interesting. And that's it, which is really fascinating. There was one comment that was posted. What I found interesting about the comment, which I did not post because I approve all posts, I did not approve it because instead of dealing with the issue of Shelley Mayer not promoting what she said she would do, in other words, she was deceptively withdrew her support, even though she said she would support this legislation, and she just let it die. And she did nothing about it. And so what's very interesting is that in so doing, she reneged on her promise. And this is what's very frightening about this sort of conduct by elected officials who talk a good game but don't deliver. If she talked a good game and tried to promote it, as she said that she would, then at least you could give her a clap and say, well, thank you for, following through and doing what you did and so on and so forth. But she did not, which is very, very frightening. And there's a lot of that going on in political circles where people who should be involved do not tell us exactly what they intend to do and don't follow through even when they claim that they will. So very, very frightening. Okay, so let me just quickly see. We'll see in a moment. We're expecting Vedat Gashi, and there he is. Perfect timing. So let's pull him in. Bear with me a second. Good morning, Mr. Gashi. How are you, sir? Hello? Okay, I don't know why I can't seem to hear him. Should be on. Mr. Gashi, can you hear us? I don't know why it says it's on hold. Bear with me a moment. Let me just see. Okay. Let me see if I could pull him in. Hello? Can you hear me, Mr. Gashi? For some reason or another, it's not coming through. Don't understand that. I'm going to just disconnect it because there's nothing I could do. I don't hear him. So hopefully he'll call us back. Well, we're hoping to speak to Mr. Gashi. He's a real estate attorney. He's a Westchester County Board legislator. He ran as a Democrat. He represents the town of Yorktown, and he's vying to represent the 16th Congressional District, which was recently redefined, as so many different districts were redefined as well. So it looks like he's calling us again, and hopefully we'll be able to hear him. I don't know what's going on, but somehow or another, I can't hear him. And so I don't know where things have gone awry. I don't contemplate it because we had no problems earlier in the day. This morning with our other guests. So Mr. Sayers had no problem. Brendan Beery had no problem. Let's see. He's trying us again.
I hear you now.
Oh, wonderful. How are you?
Can you hear?
I can.
I'm sorry we have so many problems. I can hear the radio in the background.
Oh. No, boy.
Not a problem. Can you lower the volume?
Yes. If you bear with me just one moment, I'll
take your time. Take your time. Not a problem. So I'm so excited. I've never spoken to Mr. Gashi, and so I'm excited to get to know him for the first time. And we'll learn a little bit about politics and how he got involved in politics and so on and so forth. It's going to be very, very interesting. All right, so he's working on the radio. Oh, and it looks like I no longer hear the background of myself talking.
It's a work in progress, but we're getting there.
Well, it sounds like you should, not only are you in politics and also a lawyer, but I think you're going to be really terrific when it comes to this new technology.
I think eventually I could be, but at the moment I'm still a work in progress. I think if I were, I wouldn't have had you wait. I apologize again for the trouble.
It's not a problem at all, so let's not worry about it. Well, first of all, welcome to the broadcast. Thank you for making the time. I've never spoken to you, but I've heard your name, and so that was great. And the minute I saw your name for the first time, I said, "Oh, this I've got to meet this guy because you know, of history and so on, because I love European history. And so you have a heritage that goes back to the old world, but you were born here in the United States, weren't you?
No, I was born in Kosovo. I was born in Kosovo and moved to the United States when I was four. Not quite five.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I was young enough, so I don't have an accent, but...
Okay, well, that's always good, you know, because I think Americans have a difficulty with an accent somehow or another. So I speak many languages, but but I think I've Americanized my tongue, so to speak. So it's going to be very interesting. I was in Yugoslavia when it was Yugoslavia before it broke up into different aspects,
Oh, wow.
So it was a beautiful, beautiful country. I loved it. It was fascinating. And there were so many different sections as well, with different people and different heritages. And that meant a great deal to me. So I found it fascinating. How did you get involved when you came to the United States? You grew up and you became a real estate attorney. Where did that come from?
Well, real estate attorney eventually, I think, and actually kind of a roundabout way. Growing up, I grew up initially in the Bronx and lived there until about the seventh grade. Yes, Yugoslavia was a beautiful and that area is still gorgeous.
Still beautiful.
Yeah, still beautiful. We fled oppression. The government there was eventually a pretty rough one, and the experience of the Albanians under the Serbian regime was the cause of us leaving. And so actually growing up my first memories almost were at protests at the United Nations and protesting the situation in Kosovo and the plight of ethnic Albanians in Kosovo, of which I was one. I think that's where I first thought about politics. That's my first thought about law in a roundabout way, but yeah. And I went to college, went to law school, and my first job was a clerkship with a summer clerkship. We say a glorified internship with Judge Sonia Sotomayor in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, that was my very first one. And then and from there, I decided Kosovo had just gone through the United States and NATO had bombed Serbia. Kosovo had just been liberated and needed to be rebuilt. And so that's why I returned to Kosovo at that time. At first it was for a 3-month project, but I ended up staying 5 years, helping write the laws and build the institutions of Kosovo. In truth, my first jobs, weren't exactly as a real estate attorney, but, maybe international development, attorney.
Okay.
But then at some point after, we'd done a bit of work and, worked to get, Kosovo, ready and situated and ready for independence, I should say. And Kosovo declared independence. I said, it's time to go home. And my wife and I decided to come back to the United States. She was only my girlfriend then, but she became my wife eventually. I was doing some international work until my brother told me famously, why are you afraid of money? And my response was, I'm not afraid of money. I'm just not motivated by money in the same way. So that's how I ended up.
The same thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how I ended up. And I apologize for the long answer, but that's how I ended up in as a real estate attorney. Real estate was a lot more marketable than international development. And I would say that the jobs that was being offered were, you know, Afghanistan or Iraq, Yemen, and having spent 5 years abroad, I think I missed living in the United States, and this is my home, and I think I was ready to settle back here.
Well, that's terrific. So now we have you here in the United States, and you're running for political office, which is very, very exciting. And you already are a Westchester County Board legislator, and you represent Yorktown. And what's the impetus for you to consider running for the 16th Congressional District?
Well, yeah, so a couple of years ago, after working as a real estate attorney, I was I was disappointed in, frankly, the there was a demonization of immigrants and Muslims, and I'm fairly secular,
definitely.
But I'm secular, but I am Muslim, so and an immigrant, and I thought that was I felt it important to run for office then. Ran for my first race in 2018. I lost, but won immediately thereafter in 19. Got elected to the Westchester County Legislature and was immediately made Chair of Public Works and Transportation, and got reelected and was just made Chair of Budget and Appropriations.
Wow.
I'm proud of the work that we're doing here. It's a big, we have a, you know, we oversee a $2.2 billion budget. It's a meaningful enterprise. And I'm happy doing it. And I'm proud of our record of achievement. We talk about, you know, on the environment, we've converted our fleet to hybrid and electric, which is good for the environment, but also good for our economy. We've saved millions of dollars thereby. And that's a small part of the reason, but we've been able to get pass a tax property tax cut for 3 years in a row. For every year I've been in elected office, we've had a property tax cut. And lastly, obviously, as a chair of Public Works and Transportation, that was a big focus. Infrastructure was a big focus of mine. Last year, we passed over $100 million of projects up and down Westchester. And I know how important it is, but I also know that it's not enough, that we need more and we can't do it alone. We're going to need our federal partners to help out and pull and recognize the recognize that infrastructure is so important to the jobs, you know, local jobs, to our economy, and you know, just to everyday well-being, people driving in those roads, the water and sewer, the infrastructure is a lot more than, you know, I feel like sometimes people abstract the term infrastructure and forget that it's so integral to your well-being. And I think that was the first first time that I took particular offense or disagreed strongly with the incumbent. My opponent voted against the infrastructure bill. And I was just, I didn't think that was the right path. I still don't. I don't see how you could bring yourself to vote against a $1.5 trillion historic infrastructure bill. I think we voted for Biden after 4 years of Trump to bring the country together, to understand that we're divided. And we don't need further division. We need actual solutions. We don't need symbolic votes. We need progress. And that's what I'm here to provide. I thought I've been proud of my record of service. I'd love to do more on, you know, climate and the environment, on economy, on economy and infrastructure. But there's also a bunch of things that I would like to see that I love to accomplish in Congress that you can't really impact through the county government. I'd respectfully argue that I'm the best qualified in terms of foreign policy, my work internationally, my experience, and as you know, I have a wide range, a deep well of experience to draw from, and I think a sense of understanding of some of these international issues that I'd love to bring and help be a part of the decision makers. I tell you, watching the images coming out of Ukraine right now are heart-wrenching.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a lot of ways, people are, I think, moving on, and hard not to. I mean, obviously, with the gun violence, the Buffalo, Valde, and so many other things, our attention gets pulled, and rightfully so. Those are incredibly important. But we tend to lose sight of the fact that the war in Ukraine is still going on, and Russia's on the verge of crushing that country, and in doing mm-hmm. so in a brutal and inhumane way, the likes of which we haven't seen probably, you know.
Sorry, I'm having trouble hearing.
Sorry. things are pipe in. But no, so we haven't seen, I can't see the images coming out of Bucha or so many other places in the Ukraine and not be reminded of Kosovo and Bosnia and the places where people were killed. And obviously you go further back and even to the Holocaust. These are terrible. It's terrible. And I think
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eric.
I don't know how that got started. That's all. You know, what's very interesting, though, is you said you're secular, but you also have a background in you're reverential to the Islamic world. That also must help a great deal, because I don't think we have too many people of the Islamic faith that are in government on the national level. And does that understanding and also your capacity as far as language is concerned, besides English, does that also inform you, and wouldn't that also inform the nation because you have a different perspective, a different understanding? It doesn't necessarily mean that it's different, but it's informed. Maybe that's a better term for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say I'll say largely secular, but I'm still Muslim. That's how I identify. It's still my religion. I think the popular notion is that Islam is one particular thing when it is a wide and varied religion. You know, I think there is quite a bit of diversity and differing viewpoints. When I first ran for office, I was told, maybe don't tell people that you're Muslim. And and my opinion at the time was, no, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and say who I am. But on the other side, I would go to a local mosque and just to pay my respects and to introduce myself to the community. Uh-huh. And they would say, brother, you should be coming every Friday. And I would say, well, you know, that's not me either, you know.
Okay.
So to be authentic to who I am is important. And I will say on occasion, I think you're absolutely right. It does inform who you are and your points of view. I think my upbringing, my going to PS 86 in the Bronx and graduating from there allows me to have a viewpoint and an understanding, a starting point on that issue. Working internationally similarly, and you know, working in the county government allows me to have a viewpoint on that. I will on occasion push back on people that want to make you the Muslim candidate or the Albanian candidate. I always say that I'm not that. I am running as a representative of this community, and this community includes Muslims. It includes Albanians.
Right.
We are a part of this community. And so, I'm proud to do it.
Well, I think that's what's important, and I don't think that we've had someone with an Albanian background that has shown a pride in who they are and their legacy and their history. And so it's very hard to tell. And, well, you know, I also come from a different perspective. I'm Israeli, and so I know about you know, the former Yugoslavia and the different parts of the country, because I went there to visit. But then again, I was also in Pakistan, and I was in Turkey, and all over the Arab world. So to me, this is all part of life, and it informs us because you get to see people for what they are, which is just human beings. And we're at each other's throats, unfortunately, in America by dividing ourselves from each other, which is a shame. So,
absolutely.
Better, I guess.
I think, you know, it's funny because I think the popular conception is the Jews versus the Muslims. And I'll tell you, I always felt a manner of kinship growing up in Westchester as a non-Christian growing up. You know, I think we celebrate Christmas the same way, with a movie and Chinese food.
Okay.
And,
well, that's the Jewish way.
Well, I mean, well, I've stolen it. You can't, it's not yours anymore.
Okay.
It's ours.
Okay.
But no, so, I have not found that divide the same way. I found wonderful reception from the Jewish community. And I think the greater divide right now, the thing that I've seen more often is this, you're either very right or very left. The political divide struck me as so polarized and frankly damaging. People aren't talking to each other. And I always, you know, I like to talk. I want to be challenged. I want to hear somebody's different viewpoint. And you know, I've always said that I find way more political advantage from disagreeing with somebody. I'd rather tell you where I stand honestly, rather than pretend that I stand for something that I don't.
Correct.
If we can have a conversation and be honest with each other, then we can find a way to compromise, to move forward. And I think, frankly, we're going to have to do that. So I'm eager to do it.
We're at the cusp where we need to do it. It's right. It's like we're being pushed into that realm. So definitely, hopefully that'll happen. So we'll see where that goes. So, are there any specific issues that you want to bring forward should you become elected to the 16th congressional district? Are there concerns?
There's a lot of specific concerns, but I will return to our infrastructure, our economy. You know, making sure that you know, there are on occasion people will tell you the S&P is doing this or that, and that. Not everybody owns stocks, though. We need to make sure we need to make sure that the economy is good for as many people as possible. I'll tell you another thing. I'm an immigrant, formerly undocumented. We came on a visitor's visa and overstayed. The reason I'm a citizen today is because in 1986, Ronald Reagan passed bipartisan. Immigration Reform Act of 1986.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gave me a path to citizenship. And I think, frankly, we've been law abiding. We've contributed to this economy. We've done, I think, a benefit to this country. I'd like to start that immodest. But I would love to see a path to citizenship for the estimated 11 million people living in the United States that don't have that path to citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of things that we agree on overwhelmingly, on common sense gun reform. It's amazing. It's amazing how quickly that devolves into nonsense. But I'm a gun owner. I have a concealed carry. I had a concealed carry permit, I should say. I believe in the, you know, ability to bear arms, but I don't think it's unfettered. I can't think of, I think it should have reasonable, comprehensive background checks and all sorts of common sense things that we can do that would improve our safety.
That's on target, but the problem is that somehow the mechanisms of oversight are not always there. Or they're deficient in some communities and not deficient in others. So I guess maybe something on a national scale would be more prudent.
There's a couple of things, I'm willing to disagree with people, and I know there's people with varying viewpoints, but increasingly, I can't see a real reason for anybody to have an AR-15. And I understand that it stands for Armalite and not assault rifle, but those are assault rifles. And I just don't see a reason why somebody 18 or 21, for that matter, really needs to have that. It's an implement of war. I think that's common sense thing that a lot of people will agree with. Absent very specific circumstances, you really don't need one. But somehow we can't get that progress. And maybe part of the reason is because we're so busy talking past each other, we don't take the time to talk with each other about the things that we agree on.
I think that's a problem. We're not engaged in conversation, so we don't understand where we are, and therefore we can't respond. And so, you know, it seems like everyone is in their own little world, and so I guess that's the validity to your campaign. you're willing to discuss these issues, and other issues that may come to light. And you have the intellectual capacity to discuss it, so you may be able to come to some amelioration somewhere along the line. That's the way it's supposed to work.
I always thought it was a wonderful reflection of intelligence and confidence to say, I don't know. I take the title of public servant seriously. I understand that we represent this constituency. The people that live in this district, up and down, all of them. I think on occasion, about my opponent has been that he seems to think he represents an ideology rather than the people of this district. And I think the people of this district need to represent it. We don't need symbolic votes. We need actual progress. And I argue that's what we need in the country as well, not only this district.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we're getting toward the end, and rather than forget, how do people reach out to you, and how do they become engaged in your campaign effort?
Well, that's a fantastic question. I think the easiest way to get there is going through my website. My website is vedatgashi.com. So it's vedatgashi.com. My contact information is going to be there. We're going to be overhauling that website very soon, but it's coming. Or it's there already.
Okay.
And I would love people to reach out. And it's August 23rd, which sounds like a long time from now, but it is not. It's right around the corner. So if people want to learn more, if people want to help, if people want to introduce me to their neighbors, these are all things that I would very much appreciate. So that'd be wonderful.
Terrific. Well, hopefully you'll consider, hopefully I didn't scare you, and you'll consider coming back again. And we could talk a little bit more in depth about other issues, so we won't cover the same subject matter.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, seriously, I want to thank you so much for inviting me and for covering this. I think newspapers are dying. They're being viewed less. The coverage is not as often, and it's hard to you know, our challenge is always to make sure that people know who we are and that they know who I actually am rather than who they think
I am.
We're
very well read.
So this is a fantastic.
We're very well read.
You are, but not everybody is. So the opportunity to reach out to more is fantastic. So thank you so much for that chance.
My pleasure, Mr. Gashi. Thank you so much. All the best to you. And vedatgashi.com. Thank you very much. See you soon. Be well.
Thank you again. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. there we are, folks. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Oh, no, it's Monday. Take care and goodbye. Have a great weekend. Bye.